We are opening up the phone lines in this second hour of Midday for comment from our listeners about the news, starting with the assassination of New York City police officers by a gunman who vowed revenge for the fatal deaths of unarmed men by police earlier this year. The murders of the officers in Brooklyn on Saturday afternoon has many in blue on alert across the country, and the governor of New York calling for a cooling of tensions between the police and those who protested the deaths of Michael Brown and Eric Garner. We welcome calls during the next hour, your comments on that story, or whatever else is on your mind as the holidays approach. Midday continues with open phones after the news from NPR. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here, our second hour. Open phone lines this hour, so if there's something you want to say or a question you want to ask me, want to share with our listeners, please give us a ring. Here's how you reach us, 410-662-8780. Toll-free long distance if you're listening online to Midday. We have a toll-free number, 866-661-9309. If there's something you want to write and you want me to read it on the air during this hour of the show, our email address is midday@wypr.org. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. You can post comments there as well. We haven't had a chance since it happened to talk about the assassinations in New York City of the two police officers, Wen Jian Liu and Rafael Ramos. If you would like to talk about that, please give me a ring and share with me on that. Also, the connection to Baltimore County. Today, Baltimore County Police, or yesterday, Baltimore County Police detailing the events of Saturday and how they tried to alert New York City Police to what had happened here in terms of the gunman who eventually killed those two police officers, shooting his former girlfriend at an apartment in Owings Mills, and then the Baltimore County Police being alerted to these social media vows of revenge that the gunman had made, vowing to revenge the fatal deaths of unarmed men, Michael Brown and Eric Garner, by police earlier this year, getting that information to the New York City Police, but apparently, obviously, not in time. If you'd like to comment on that situation and what the fallout from it, what we've been hearing the last few days, police union's criticism of Mayor de Blasio in New York City, and then Mayor de Blasio calling for a suspension of demonstrations related to the deaths of unarmed men by police, asking the public in New York to report any possible threats against police officers, and urging New Yorkers to thank and console officers who are now in mourning over those deaths there, and police on alert throughout the country because of what happened on Saturday afternoon in Brooklyn. If you'd like to comment, please give me a ring. I just have a program note. I wanted to mention that in a couple of days, Christmas Day, starting at noon, you can hear what Christmas in Maryland sounded like on the radio 71 years ago. This is going to be a rebroadcast of what has turned out to be a real radio treasure discovered in the archives of a newspaper, not at a radio station. The Baltimore Sun in 1943 had its foreign correspondents, its war correspondents, who were in England with the assembling armies and Army Air Force, put together a Christmas show at three different bases, I think, in England. And the radio show, which included music and interviews with lots of Marylanders and soldiers from Virginia as well, being heard on the air on Christmas Day, 1943. We broadcast that last year. We're going to do it again this Thursday on Christmas Day from noon to 2. So just a program note regarding that. 410-662-8780. What do you think of the criticism leveled against the mayor of New York City by the police union there? I know there's been discussion of it here on NPR already. Yesterday, Hear It Now addressed that topic, but I'd like to hear from some of the folks locally here. Also, I guess you caught, maybe you caught the David Zurawicz story in the Sun today about the Fox station here, WBFF, Channel 45, apologizing for the edit it did of a protest, a protest slogan in Washington. WBFF apologizing for editing and airing a video of that protest march in Washington that made it appear as if protesters were chanting "kill a cop." The edit stopped at a certain point where you might have gotten that impression. It was a bad decision, a bad edit. Fox 45 apologizing for that error on the news yesterday. Comments on that are welcome. Sean in Timonium, we'll take your call. There's open phones here, so you're welcome to call in. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Dan. I'm calling in response to the potential run of Ben Carson. As I'm an atheist myself, and over the last couple of years, Dr. Carson has made some, profoundly ignorant remarks about atheists, and just some profoundly ignorant remarks concerning religious views applied to like public life. He himself is a self-professed young Earth creationist. He believes the Earth is less than 6,000 years old. He denies evolution, and he denies climate change. And it's sad because this is a man who has an unbelievably powerful and useful and great career as a surgeon who has done incalculable good for an incalculable number of kids, but he's spreading ideas that are counterintuitive and counterproductive to our culture as a whole. And also, he's reportedly said that he thinks that atheists are incapable of morality and ethics. And as an atheist myself, who, I'm a paramedic and a firefighter, I believe firmly that anybody can be ethical or moral, and I would argue that someone with an agnostic or an atheist worldview might, in fact, have a more ethical or moral outlook on the world. I think that not only will that'll probably solidify his base, but hopefully, as our culture evolves and moves away from old manners of thinking and becomes more agnostic, I think it might actually mobilize other voting blocks against him. And I'll take my comments off there.
Well, Sean, you don't have to leave me if you don't want to. We could talk a little bit about it. I was curious how old you are and whether you had read Dr. Carson's books. Gifted Hands, one of them.
I'm 33. I read Gifted as somebody left it at the firehouse one day, and I had nothing else to read, and the TV was broke, so I ended up reading punks, like big chunks of it. Like he's a smart guy, and that's what upsets me about him. He's obviously intelligent. You can't become a surgeon and deal with the complicated medical issues he did throughout his career without being intelligent. But intelligence is not always spectrum-based. It seems like you can be really smart at one thing and be incredibly profoundly wrong on a lot of others.
Yeah.
And that's always been my viewpoint on him. And as a Democrat and an atheist, if he runs in 2016, I'm stoked because that means that, reasonable people with reasonable ideas that are backed by both science and academia are going to have a better shot at getting into the politics.
Yeah. It does make you wonder why such a buzz about him, and it does make you wonder who are the people supporting him and how large a section of the Republican Party is that. Just a comment on Dr. Carson, my experiences with him. Years ago, I can't remember when this was. It might have been in the 1980s. I was writing a column for The Sun, as I've been doing all these years. I'm still doing. But I went over to interview him about an effort he was making to stop young African-American boys from getting killed in the streets of Baltimore. He was making a personal effort to mentor some of them and was talking a lot about why we have to make that stop, that those lives are valuable, this great missed potential. And by having so many young men die at an early age from violence in Baltimore. This was in the, mid to late 80s, maybe the early 90s. And he revealed none of this stuff that we're hearing now at that time to me. I had no idea. I thought, if anything, he was probably a liberal, someone embracing an effort like this, or a progressive, certainly. And he's a great story. I mean, Dr. Carson's narrative, his life story, is a great story that people have applauded many times and that he wrote about in his book. And he did extraordinary things as a surgeon. So that's why I asked Sean if he had read the books. You had an opinion of Ben Carson before all this started. But a doctor, a surgeon who says of the Affordable Care Act, why was it necessary to disrupt entire medical system to take care of the needs of 15% of the people. This was a tweet he put out. Why was it necessary to disrupt entire medical systems to take care of the needs of 15% of the people? Well, first of all, you know, the hyperbole in there, disrupting the entire medical system, I don't think there's any evidence that the ACA has done that. But then the theme in that, the message in there is that we shouldn't do anything extraordinary because 15% of the people needed some help, needed some insurance so they could get health care. And this is coming from a doctor. So I can understand why people scratch their heads over the Ben Carson they're seeing today and the Ben Carson they've seen over the years. And personally, I was very surprised at all of this when it started to develop and he started speaking more of and sharing more of his political views and philosophical views in the last couple of years. It's Tocumbo. Tocumbo in Federal Hill. Tocumbo, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, sir? Thank you for putting me on. Great
good.
Show.
Thank you for calling.
All I want to say real briefly was, as everybody knows, like Mayor de Blasio and the protest movements are getting lots of criticism because this cold-blooded murderer killed those two cops. And he was a maniac, cold-blooded murderer. Nobody's justifying it. My point is that why does everybody blame the protest movement when in Las Vegas a few months ago, Jared and Amanda Miller killed those two Las Vegas cops? They specifically cited Clive Bundy, and they were Tea Party affiliated. You know, but when they killed the Las Vegas cops, everybody said, well, they're maniacs. We're not going to judge them or conflate them with the Tea Party movement. Well, why do you want to conflate this maniac with the protest movement against institutionalized racism and police brutality, specifically to unarmed black men? They're two separate things. Not a single person justifies what this maniac did the other day.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the police union reaction to de Blasio even before this assassination occurred Saturday, Tocumbo.
Yeah.
They were critical of him. Even for the statements he made about his son.
His son!
That he had warned his son about how to, I don't know if he used the word warned, but he had talked to his son about how he should behave in encounters with the police.
Every parent does that. Every parent. As a black man myself, my mother gave me the same lecture. Not just with police, but when you walk into a store, don't put your hands in your pockets, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Every black child gets that.
Well, I'm glad you said the second time every black child gets that, because you started off by saying every parent has that conversation.
Every
and
parent
I'm going to tell you, I don't think white parents have that conversation, sir.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
No, you're right. Yeah, that's what I meant.
I know that's what you meant. It's interesting the way it came out, though. I'll just report that Commissioner Bratton in New York conceded that the shootings appeared to be a direct spinoff of this issue of the recent protests, because one followed the other, and you have the social media statements from the gunman himself, which are just so horrible, just so evil. So I guess that's why. And let's be real here. I mean, Ferguson and the decision in the Garner case. Both have heightened all the tensions here, and this is a pretty extraordinary situation to see assassination of police officers in broad daylight. What else did you want to say about that, Tocumbo?
I agree with you. It's absolutely horrible. I was just saying it's the same, but they were both horrible things.
The Vegas shootings too, right?
Yeah, they were horrible. They were both horrible.
Yeah, because one was like an anti-government message, right?
Specifically, he said the Clive Bundy is what he cited. Remember the Clive Bundy thing?
Yes.
Where they tried to take the guy's lamp? That's what he cited as a reason for killing the cops.
Yeah.
And he took their guns and he put the flag over them. So I'm saying that he specifically cited that. Just like this maniac specifically cited Eric Garner and Michael Brown. So just because you have cold-blooded murderers and people who are mentally unbalanced citing specific things, then do we then say, okay, well, that movement is at fault? I didn't hear one single, no significant people or leadership in the protest movement advocating any violence. Yeah. We're trying to do a political change. That's it.
Yeah. It's a pretty extreme statement to say you have blood on your hands for the mayor, and city officials say they have blood on their hands because of the act of this obviously deranged gunman. 410-662-8780. And the message is sort of, are police right or wrong? Is that the message that the police union wants to give? I don't think so. But that's how some people will read it. We'll take a break. 410-662-8780. This is Midday. We have open phones this entire hour. Yeah, I appreciate emails like this one from Carol, writing to us at midday@wypr.org. I wonder if it's possible for the American people and the media to hold two seemingly opposing ideas in our heads at one time. Is it possible to recognize that we have a national problem with some egregious policing practices by some police officers as it relates to African Americans? Those practices need to be investigated, stopped, and maybe some officers need to be tried and convicted. At the same time, police officers have a very difficult job and they need to be respected and appreciated for their service. Can the two ideas exist simultaneously? I think so, says Carol, but apparently some politicians, union officials, media, talking heads, and Americans disagree. No, I think you're right where most Americans are, actually. I mean, that's true, but some go to extremes and don't share both views, but that's where all of I think most of us are today with this. Anyway, more emails, comments are welcome. Midday@wypr.org. Open phones, so, you know, share whatever you'd like this hour. It doesn't have to be serious. It can be on the lighter side. On the lighter side of things, a little bit, I just want to mention a tweet that I saw a few minutes ago that really made me laugh. I asked who pulled the internet plug on North Korea, you know. Does anyone know yet? And, you know, Sean Gallagher, who was here last week, he's the IT editor at Ars Technica, a real bright guy, keeps up on tech and digital news. He sent out a picture of that very funny guy from Airplane, the Airplane film with Leslie Nielsen and Peter Graves from years ago. The guy the very funny guy who's always giggling in the control tower. I can't remember his name. I don't know the actor's name, but he pulled the plug on it's a classic scene from Airplane. People are wondering why something isn't working, and he realizes that the plug has been pulled out. Anyway, it's a very funny response to my question, who pulled the plug on North Korea's internet? Back to a more serious topic. Ed in Pasadena will go to you next. Thanks for calling Midday.
Yes, I had a couple comments. I'd like to see the media ask the question where the gun came from that the perpetrator used in the killing of the two police officers. I'm proud to say I don't think it came legally, at least from Maryland, because we have pretty good gun laws.
Yeah.
Second comment on the Affordable Care Act. I'm covered by state of Maryland insurance, state of Maryland employee insurance, and retired, and I haven't seen any change in my health care since the act was in. I think the act mainly affects people who don't have insurance and people who didn't want insurance but need to have it if everybody's going to be covered.
Correct. And people who had plans and those plans did not meet the standards of the ACA, so they had to find plans that did. Those people complained a lot. Whenever we talk about this, Ed, I'm guaranteed to get an email from somebody with a horror story about how they liked the plan they had. The president said, if you like the plan you have, you can keep it. And they've never let him live that down. What it meant was your plan didn't meet the standards of the ACA, so you got to get something better.
Yes, so
those people I hear from, those people complain.
But you're
generally correct, though. I mean, it didn't affect most people who already had insurance.
That's right. One last comment. How would we like it if North Korea put on a show that was going to for export, because many of our movies go all over the world, about assassinating President Obama?
Yeah, I know.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed, for saying that. And a couple of listeners sent me a Facebook post by a gentleman who I think lives in Frederick County, which very eloquently stated what Ed just did raised that whole question about, what are we supporting here, and why are we worried that Sony Corporation doesn't get to distribute a film chose not to distribute a film, or they say that the movie theaters wouldn't show the film, right? So they pulled it, but which is given its nature. And even I heard this from a 20-something guy the other day who said to me, Seth Rogen and James Franco can't make a funnier movie about something else that doesn't involve killing a head of state. Okay. Okay. All right, you said it. I heard somebody else say that the other day. Penny in Baltimore, you're on Midday next. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I hate to bring the conversation back to politics.
No. This is very interesting. No, it's open phones. You're allowed to do that. Yeah.
Okay. but I just, after your last hour, I wanted to just put out there a question. I wonder how many people like me are very willing to look at Jeb Bush. I'm not committing, but I would love to hear his stand on things. The one vote I regret in my life, I'm 62, is not voting for a second term of Herbert. I thought W was a disaster the whole eight years,
mm-hmm.
but I associate Jeb and his politics more with his father, and I liked his father.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you regretted voting for Bill Clinton in 92.
That first time.
Yeah.
I don't dislike Clinton. But that first time, if I had known how much Herbert was really doing environmentally and a number of other different things, but he was just getting them done. The carbon tax, I think, originated.
Yeah.
With him.
And, you know, for W, you got to give W credit for a couple of things. Not the wars, obviously, that completely overshadow his presidency and the torture that we're hearing more about now. But, you know, he took a serious stab at immigration reform in 2006, I believe it was, or 2005, and got nowhere with it because of his own party had started to run to the extreme.
So, well, he did so many other...
Yeah.
Immoral and atrocious things
yeah.
that I can't really get on board with that.
But, I know, but since immigration is such a big issue now, you could say that. And apparently, his brother shares the same sort of conviction toward reforming that system.
That's what I understand too.
Yeah.
So I would just love to hear more about Jeb. You know, I would love to hear what his stands are. So I'm not dismissing him out of hand because his last name is Bush.
Right.
At all.
It'll be interesting to see how that primary goes. With, you know, if Don Norris and Melissa Dekman are correct that the extreme right is going to rule in 2016. I don't know who do they put up that's appealing to a broad spectrum of Americans. Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Rand Paul. We'll see. Penny, thank you very much.
Rand Paul is very...
yeah, he's interesting, too.
I heard.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that I'm not hopeful about the Democrats. And I don't see anybody that I like so far. So,
not Hillary.
Oh, really.
Not Hillary, then. Huh?
No. Oh, well, I don't know. She hasn't firmly decided.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd have to think about that. But definitely not O'Malley. So,
okay.
And definitely not Carson. So there you go. Anyway, I wanted to just put that out there.
Thanks,
I wonder
Penny.
How many people would be as interested as I am.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your comment on that. And happy holidays to you, Jim in Towson. You're next. Welcome to Midday.
Hi. How are you? Thanks
okay.
for taking my call.
Sure.
Gosh. You know, we have a crazy man up in New York who goes to kind of give a message. Really is what he tried to do, and I think he did. He put all police on alert all over the United States. I mean, we've too many guns in this society, 300 million. A police must approach everybody as if they had a pistol in their pocket. Really, I would if I were a cop. I would. It's a terrible, terrible job. It's worse than battlefield. So I thought, what two things could I advise? Well, modify the behavior towards citizens. They really, they can't shoot, you know, kids and insane people. And then second, perhaps mount a nationwide campaign to take the teeth out of the NRA. I know that sounds radical. And legislate a total ban on all weapons except for hunting rifles. There are countries who have done that with no problem at all. It's always been that way. We really... crazy that way as a nation.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate your comment, Jim. And Ed bringing up guns
I bring it up, and it's, it sounds predictable, so I'm glad, because people know how I feel about them. I've written a lot about guns, and I'm glad to hear listeners bring this up, because we talk about police behavior, police conduct, police interactions with African-American men on the streets of the city, of cities everywhere. But look at the millions of guns, real and fake, and I'll mention fake because of what happened to the 12-year-old boy in Cleveland. His last name was Rice. I'm sorry, what was his first name? Oh, my goodness. But anyway, in that case, it was not even a real gun. Tamir Rice, yeah. And I'll say, you know, I'll mention TVs and movies, video games. And it's a culture. We're infested with guns at all levels. It puts so many Americans at risk in so many different ways. The nation has almost as many guns as citizens, as Jim just mentioned here, maybe more now. And no wonder the police have their fingers on triggers. The combination of the war on drugs, that's another thing, which forces police into daily contact with people who are selling or using contraband in some way. And then the rise in firepower on the streets that's been going on for 20 years or more, that heightens the tensions and increases the risk of injury or death to all involved, citizens and police. No wonder police, I'm not saying they have, you know, hair trigger, all of them, but no wonder they're on guard all the time because of the amount of firepower that's on the street. Kevin in Baltimore, we'll go to you next. You're on Midday. Hi, Kevin.
Hello. First time caller. I enjoy listening to your show.
Oh, welcome to you.
I just wanted to say that it was a tragedy that the officers in New York were murdered in that way. But I think after some good will come out of it, because it will force police agencies to look at their policies and how they are dealing with rogue cops. And another thing I think that they should address is the fact that a lot of those rogue cops don't exist if the ones that's not acting in that manner don't stand up. It makes me think about the case in Baltimore where one of the cops did tell that an officer did something wrong, and how they started threatening him, and they put a rat on his car, just intimidation, just because he stood up for right.
Yeah.
So that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that, Kevin. I don't think we need the deaths of police officers to talk about reform, but I understand what you're making. All of this entire atmosphere this year, created by the death of Michael Brown, the death of Eric Garner, the lack of indictments in those cases that outrage people. I still look at the grand jury. I think we got to look at the secret grand jury system, because that reduces the public's faith and trust in the judicial system. I think it might be time for that to go and replaced by that other system we talked about, where you have preliminary hearings, where evidence is presented, where a judge gets to hear what the evidence is. It's done in open court. Defense counsel is available to ask questions. The rules of evidence apply as they would in a trial. I believe that's the case. But anyway, that's a different forum for deciding whether to press charges against a police officer or anybody than a secret grand jury. So that's one thing you could do in terms of reform. In terms of the behavior of police on the street, that's another thing. I won't be able to address that today, but I've been thinking a lot about the grand jury system and also the possibility of using independent prosecutors, people who do not know the police officers or are not engaged on a daily or weekly basis with local police departments when a police officer is involved in the death of a citizen. So just bring in an independent prosecutor and go from there. Ben in Baltimore, we'll take your call next. Thanks for calling Midday Open Phones.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure.
I just had a quick question or to hear your views. Would the reaction or actions of the police towards the civilians be different if they were required to have a college degree, their way of thinking, maybe just like degrees that focus more on social structure, race, history, or psychology to sort of help better understand the social structure in the community and the people that they serve. I've always had this question in mind.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting you mentioned that question because Leonard Hamm was on our show a couple weeks ago. Now, he's the former police commissioner of Baltimore City, longtime law enforcement official, who's now at Coppin State, was at Morgan once upon a time, and served as commissioner before Fred Bielfeld, who was also here. And I think Leonard Hamm and I think Fred Bielfeld acknowledged that this was correct. There just is not enough training in that regard on those issues. There is not enough education, certainly in the academy, and there could be more. As to whether a college degree is required, I knew you... Somebody's going to ask that. I can't remember now whether Baltimore City requires that or not.
I don't think
you don't think it's required
to have it.
All right.
But you know, without just offending the current police officers, I think they have a lot of knowledge. They're well experienced. I have a lot of respect for them. But I think now the world, at least the society that I feel that I'm living in, is getting more complex.
Yeah.
There's more diversity, and there's also a lot of history that has taken place that deals with race and people and how black people react to police officers. That in itself alone, you know, you can spend, you know, 2-3 years just learning about how to communicate with people that have been under that kind of oppression in the past and how to respond to them. And I think it'll be benefit for everybody. So,
I know it's hard to require college degrees of police officers. We had a op-ed in The Sun. Let's see if I can find it here. I believe it said that we don't currently require that, and that was a suggestion of an op-ed that appeared in The Sun just in the last couple of months. I'll look it up during the next break and get back to you. I just can't remember everything off the top of my head. Here's Peggy's comment by email on Dr. Ben Carson. She says, unfortunately, Dr. Ben Carson's presidential aspirations give new meaning to the adage, don't give up your day job. 410-662-8780. If you'd like to send in an email comment, that address is midday@wypr.org. A little bit later on, a little tribute at the end of our show to Joe Cocker, who died yesterday at the age of 7. I love Joe Cocker. Please call in. Also, if you have anything else you'd like to reflect on, we can continue to talk about the police and the assassinations of police officers in New York City and the demonstrations. Couple of local stories we could address as well. I'll mention those when we get back. But also, if there's other things you have on your mind as the holidays approach you want to share with us, we can end on a lighter note in the next 20 minutes or so. So feel free to give us a ring if there's something you want to share. 410-662-8780. Sure, a member of the Baltimore City Police Department will call in, or someone who has been in the police department will call in with that information if we don't get it first on whether police officers are required to have college degrees. I don't think that's the case, but I don't have that confirmed yet. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. Back to the phone lines. Who's calling? Please, I need to see that. Yeah, thank you very much. Ben in Baltimore. No, not Ben. Ari in Westminster. Hi.
Yeah, Dan, I just wanted to say that the police teachers, we need to invest in police officers with additional training. I think that police today lack any discretion and they're told that if they use discretion, it gets them into trouble, which may be rightfully so, but it also impinges upon some of our rights at times. So I think if there's an investment that's made in training and requiring improved quality in the police force, that would serve society well. The other thing is that regardless of race, I think that teenagers should be taught to be respectful of police, and I certainly believe that I tell my kids to keep their hands at 10 and 2 and no sudden moves and just, you know, listen to what's being asked of you.
Can I go back to your first point, please, Ari? You think police are trained not to use discretion? Is discretion in what? In the use of firepower?
No, I think it's, I think it's discretion in, with respect to judgment over, how they interact with.
All right, I'm sorry, Ari. We spent an hour talking about this with two former police commissioners about how officers are trained, and I'm not sure what point you're using. Discretion in the use of firepower. I think police officers always are using discretion about what they do and say to people all the time. If a police officer wants to call in here and talk with us in the time that we have remaining in this hour, it'd probably be helpful. 410-662-8780. In the meantime, we'll go to Rachel in Bel Air. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I just want to make a comment. A couple callers ago, you were talking about whether parents have talks or not with their children on how to act with police.
Mm.
And you said that you don't think any white parents talk to the children about that. I just wanted to say, as a white parent with three white children that are 9, 8, and 6, we have that conversation anytime something like this comes up in the news. So they know how to behave and not be a problem.
You're right. So if it comes up in the news, you have a conversation with your sons about how they behave when the police officer asks them questions.
Sons and daughters. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's good. I applaud you for doing that. But what I'm talking about is the sort of regimen of being an African-American parent of a young boy in particular. I've spoken to a number of African-American people about the raising of young men, and that's one of the things they talk to them about especially when they become teenagers and they're, walking on the streets of the city. And,
absolutely, and so. I'm not saying that I have the same experience at all. I'm just saying you can't say no white parents have this conversation.
Yeah. If I said that no white parents have this conversation, what I meant was, as part of the routine of life, I'm not sure this is something that white parents think about as much as black parents do, African-American parents. Okay?
Right.
Can we?
Yeah.
I think we agree on that.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm
I know what I do. I just want to let you know that it's not a conversation that's not held in white households.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that. I'm merely saying that over the years, I've heard this so many times from African-American parents, and I just don't think it's a thing that white parents worry about, their encounters with police or encounters with other young men on the street as much. Diane in Baltimore, we'll go to you next. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you. My comment is probably more a question. Wondering if getting together, having police as ordinary civilians, police and their families, get together in their own neighborhoods or in their precincts with other families in their neighborhoods on a friendly basis, like on a picnic type thing, or not a public forum, but something as a social gathering, so that families get to know families. It's not an official thing, but just a very human thing to do. I think when you get to know people, you can have a whole different outlook on who they are and think about them as ordinary human beings.
Mm-hmm.
That would help both the police and the people in the neighborhood to see each other differently.
It would help a great deal. It would help in many aspects of life for people to actually talk to each other more rather than just assume that they're adversaries in some way.
And absolutely.
Some people have suggested, police officers ought to live in the communities that they patrol. Police officers, I don't think, feel that strongly about that. Maybe a lot of them are opposed to that idea. They want to go home. They want to get away from the areas where they're assigned. But that doesn't mean they can't have more social encounters with people. There are community associations, neighborhood associations that have block parties, that have all kinds of things during the year. And,
sure.
And maybe there ought to be a greater effort made to get to know the police officers who are likely to be on your street protecting your property and your person. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
If you get to know, you know, you have this spillover. If you know a couple policemen, it's kind of like you know a few others, even though you haven't met them. You get to know police as human beings.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that comment.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And
happy holidays to you, Diane. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. I wonder if a police officer will ever call into this show and share some of his or her thoughts about this. I'd like to hear from you. I still don't have an answer to the question about Baltimore City, whether it requires a college degree to be a police officer. As I said, I don't think it does, but I'd like to see some confirmation before we get off the air about Baltimore City. What I have here is a story from The Sun that I remember reading, an op-ed in September, written by John Hudgens, an associate professor of sociology at Coppin State, who cited Bureau of Justice Statistics, a study from 2003, which is actually pretty old, professor, now, found that 83% of all U.S. police agencies require a high school diploma, but only 8% require some college. Only 1% of police agencies require a four-year college degree. Baltimore area police departments are not in the 1%. Okay, so thank you very much for that. That's at least from an op-ed from this professor at Coppin State, John Hudgens. And I don't know, my editor at The Sun is likely to throw back a story if I quoted something from 11 years ago. But, you know, we all have different standards, I guess. Steve. Steve,
yes.
Yeah, you're up next. Welcome to Midday.
I have a question about the recent broadcast on Fox 45 News where they deliberately misquoted a protest in which someone appeared to be saying they were in favor of killing cops when, in fact, they were just suggesting that police that killed someone should go to prison themselves. It came out that they had deliberately, misspliced the tape. And I would assume that in the Baltimore Sun or New York Times, someone doing that would be immediately fired along with the editors. Fox 45 just seemed to treat it more like inadvertent misstatement of fact.
Let me share this with the listeners who haven't heard the whole thing. So The chant at this demonstration was, "We won't stop, we won't stop. We can't stop till killer cops are in cell blocks." Okay, that's the whole quote. And apparently Fox 45, someone over there edited at the words kill a cop, or it sounded like we can't stop till killer cops. It made it sound like they were saying kill a cop.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Does that clear to everybody? I'm sorry. I wish I had the recording here. I could play it for you. But The Sun had it on our website last night. Well, you could contrast the actual chant with what got on the air. And your question, Steve, is if someone at The Sun had made such an edit in a news story, would that person be fired?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it seemed like a deliberate effort to inflame the listeners and deliberately misconstrue things. And I'm guessing that's the kind of thing that would get a reporter from a responsible news organization fired or severely rebuked.
Yes, well, if the motivation was, as you describe, and a reporter was trying to get, you know, a front-page story out of something like that, that's one thing. But if a reporter misheard a chant, although a chant, you get many opportunities to hear a chant, right? So if you don't get it the first time, they're going to keep chanting it until you get it right, and then you can also walk up to the person with your notepad and say, what is it exactly you're saying if you don't understand every word completely, right? You should try to get it right. But if it's an innocent mistake where you misquote somebody, I don't know if that gets you fired. That gets a correction in the newspaper and a reprimand from your boss. But if it's deliberately done, I guess that's why people have a suspicion of Fox TV. Last night I don't know what got into me. I was watching Fox TV and Greta Sustern's show. Greta Van Susteren, sorry. Who I like. I know, I've watched her show from time to time. She had people on complaining about Obama going on vacation at this time of national crisis over the deaths of the police officers. And that the president, what should the president do? Well, the president had issued a statement about it on Sunday. And I don't know, they seem to be making up a controversy that Obama should come home. Our senior producer, Nikki Gamer, has spoken to the Baltimore City Police Department and confirmed what I thought, that a college degree is not needed to become a police officer in Baltimore City. Thank you, Ms. Gamer. Thank you very much. Carl in Baltimore, will go to you next. Thank you for calling the show.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
First of all, I'd like to say I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller.
That's appreciated, Carl.
And one of the things I would like to mention is that, excuse me, I had to drink something. Throat got a little dry, I'm sorry.
Okay.
But anyway, what I'd like to mention is that I have two African-American sons. I'm also an African-American man. I was raised in an area that now is considered a dangerous area. Back when I was growing up, it wasn't considered that. A little rough, but it wasn't dangerous. Now it is an area where it's considered dangerous. And raising my sons, which are men now, as they got older, we increased this conversation on how to handle, first of all, being confronted by the police. What you do when you're confronted by the police. If you're in a car, how you handle yourself in the car with police. And also how to do this kind of stuff at night, in the day, and in certain other situations. Because some of the things that may happen to your son may not be because of your son. It may be because of some of their friends.
Right, and it's not necessarily, Carl, it's not necessarily about the police all the time either, is it?
And that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Now the thing is, I'm a big guy. I've never been a small guy, okay? I have a booming voice. So what I have to learn is to manage my voice when I speak to certain people.
Okay, Carl. No, I didn't mean to cut off Carl. I mean, let Carl finish. Carl, we're running out of time. I just wanted you
okay,
to wrap
okay.
up.
Okay, okay. So to sum all of this up is that, yes, as a black man in America, you do have to have these conversations with your children, not only the girls but the boys, because if you don't, they will become a statistic and you will be able to carry them to their place of resting.
All right, Carl. Thank you very much. I appreciate your perspective on that. Sorry to push things along here because it's time to say goodbye for the day. And thank everybody for calling into this hour of midday open phones. I also want to wish Merry Christmas and happy holidays to everybody. And thank you all for listening to our show throughout the course of the year. Joe Cocker died yesterday. I was a big fan of Joe Cocker. I loved his songs. I loved the way he sang, his appreciation of the blues. So I thought we'd end by listening a little bit of Joe here with Maxine Green. I think this was in concert in Germany where this was recorded. So we'll listen to a little bit of this and try to get some uplift, even though it's kind of sad to think about Joe dying at the age of 70. Anyway, have a great rest of the week and happy holidays, everybody. I'll see you again soon. Build mountains in our way, but because